Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, vitamin B12 deficiency in children, a treatable cause of neurodevelopmental delay. Also, sulforaphane. That's what you get when you eat broccoli and cauliflower and Brussels sprouts. Well, it helps alleviate neurobehavioral deficits and protects your brain from amyloid beta deposits. Lay language, it helps your brain stay younger longer. Just an hour a day of TV watching creates an unhealthy weight gain in children. And vitamin D is associated with quality of life, physical activity in rheumatoid arthritis patients. And fish liver oil, when younger, can produce a healthier heart when you're older. Plus, a study shows that replacing just one serving of sugary drink per day with water or an unsweetened tea cuts the risk of type 2 diabetes. And a lot more. Then from our environmental segment, many of you will recall that I said that we are now in chaos theory. And once something starts to melt, there is no accurate mathematical model to determine how long will it take before there is some tipping where it cannot be controlled, where there's a feedback loop. It just keeps going and going. It's here. Quote, gravity data shows that Antarctic ice sheet is melting increasingly faster. Princeton University, published in Science Daily. What does that mean? It is bad to the bone, but I'll tell you. Also, for those of you living in California, we have a lot of people living up and down California who listen to this radio program, plus in Oregon and Washington, even in Vancouver. In Canada. So we have something coming at us. It's a super El Nino. Likely a huge warm water wave hits the West Coast. Extreme marine die-off developing. So that's our environmental segment. I'll go into depth on that. Plus, the government now plans on targeting pregnant women for vaccinations. That's good for Big Pharma, not good for those women. Why? We'll give you the actual statistics, what happens with just one vaccine, the flu vaccine, that when pregnant women get it, nothing good happens. Also, time permitting, I'm going to share with you some of the most interesting comments off the internet. I think you'll find them inspiring. Let's begin. Just 1 hour a day is linked, of watching TV, is linked to unhealthy weight gain in kindergartners. This is from the National Center for Education Statistics. Quote, new research shows it doesn't take much for kids to be considered couch potatoes. Kindergartners and first graders who watch as little as 1 hour of television a day were more likely to be overweight or obese compared to children who watch TV for less than 60 minutes a day. That was presented at the Pediatric Academic Societies. So we should be getting our kids outside, getting them playing, getting them involved. They shouldn't be in front of a television. And parents can control that. Unless the parents are using television as a babysitter, not a good idea. For those of you who've been taking your vitamin D, good, because there's new research out that shows that vitamin D deficiency is common in rheumatoid arthritis, and it's related to other diseases as well. The good part of this is when you're taking, let's say, 3,000 to 4,000 units of vitamin D a day, you're going to improve the quality of your life and be able to engage in greater physical activity even with rheumatoid arthritis. So that's all good. Vitamin B12 deficiency, it's common, it's treatable, and the latest study out of New Delhi shows that giving vitamin B12 is important because it helps overcome neurodevelopmental delay, meaning your kid's brain is able to function better with vitamin B12. Mentioning something our brains work better at, sulforaphane. Sol, S-U-L, furo, F-O-R-A, fane, P-H-A-N-E. That's the chemical agent that's in your cruciferous vegetables. That's why I recommend people take their cruciferous vegetables every day. Juicing them, great. Powders, better. Eating them, terrific. But get your broccoli, cauliflower, kale, mustard greens. Get them in your system. This is from China's Medical University Hospital. According to the latest research, Alzheimer's disease, which is a very common neurodegenerative disease in the elderly, has not had any effective therapies. But this is shown to be neuroprotective, and it's sulforaphane. And so they're suggesting that to help get rid of the plaques in both the hippocampus and the cerebral cortex of these, where these lesions exist, that you take sulforaphane. And they gave it sulforaphane, and it was found to make a big difference in reducing lesions. So the takeaway message for everyone in this audience who has someone who has memory loss, dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, start juicing. It takes a little more effort and time. You don't have to have a lot of it. I'm going to say this would be a diluting juice, meaning you have celery and green apple as your primary juice. Then you add about 3 ounces of broccoli, kale, spinach, mustard greens into that. And that makes a big difference because the sulforaphane then gets into the brain and starts breaking down that amyloid plaque. And the omega-3 fatty acids reduce toxic effects of chemotherapy. This is published in the Journal of the American Medical Association's Oncology, found that, quote, omega-3 fatty acids can reduce the effectiveness of the side effects. So, the toxic effects. So, that's one thing to consider. And also, and by the way, vitamin C does a great deal of good also. And we've heard about the importance of going water, pure clean water, instead of a soft drink. This is from the University of Cambridge in the United Kingdom, published in the peer review journal, which was the European Association for the Study of Diabetes, that just a 5% increase in a person's total energy intake provided by sweet drinks, including soft drinks, increases your risk of developing type 2 diabetes by 18%. Now, the reality is either people like myself, many listening, don't drink any of these sweetened drinks at all. If we're going to have a drink, it's going to be a natural juice where the natural sugars in it are not high and where everything else in it is good for us. These juices have nothing in them that's good. It's all bad. So this is the latest study. This was a large study. 25,000 men and women were in this study. So get rid of that glass of soft drink each day, and you can help protect yourself from diabetes. Also, if you increase the amount of carotenoids, it lowers your risk of diabetes. This is from the University Medical Center in the Netherlands. Quote, high dietary intake of alpha and beta carotene, there's your vegetables, are associated with reduced type 2 diabetes risk in generally healthy adults. And this was the European Prospective Investigation into Cancer Nutrition Study, published in Nutrition, Metabolism, and Cardiovascular Disease. So lay language, when you're eating your mixed vegetables, the colorful ones like red peppers, sweet peppers, and yellow, like yellow tomatoes, and red tomato, and red beet, and an orange, or and also an orange, let's say, carrot. These are where you get your carotenoids. Those are converted into vitamin A in the body, and that helps protect you against diabetes. And that's important. And also, according to the Colgate Australian Clinical Dental Research Center, early signs of arthritis can be found in the mouth. Quote, a common gum disease may indicate a person's risk of developing rheumatoid arthritis later in life. Professor Mark Bartold, director of the university's Australian Clinical Dental Research Center, says multiple processes that occur in the body when someone develops periodontal gum disease serve as an indicator of possible development of rheumatoid arthritis later in life? What is this infections and leading to gingivitis? So, what is the takeaway message? It's simple. When you have any form of local infection, and a lot of those are in the mouth, because you have a weakened immune system, the time is to first get holistic dental care, then secondly, to build up your immune system, get rid of these local focal infections, and protect yourself from arthritis. Now, also, turmeric, which is one of the most important herbs in the world because we get curcumin from turmeric, quote, turmeric boosts working memory in one small dose. Quote, one small dose of turmeric powder was found to improve working memory in pre-diabetic patients. All right. And this was published in the Asia-Pacific Journal of Clinical Nutrition. The article was entitled Turmeric Improves Postprandial Working Memory in Pre-Diabetic Independent of Insulin. And they said it was a small dose. It was 1,000 to 2,000 milligrams. So that's not bad. I would suggest 5 to 6,000. So that's the latest on health and healing. And we're going to take a look at the environment, and then we'll take a brief break. First up, this is what I was talking about over and over again. Now it's being confirmed. My concern was that once you get into one of these chaos loops, all the guessing in the world won't help. So someone could say, yeah, that amount of melting might occur over the next 150 to 200 years, but until then, we have nothing to worry about. Don't worry about earthquakes in California. We probably have another 300 years before that big one happens, when everyone on Earth is dead several times over. None of that is true anymore. We're absolutely in chaos theory on everything involving the environment. So anyone who gives you any assurances that you can go ahead and build someplace, live someplace, you don't have to worry about the environment, they're simply coming from being ignorant of the facts. This is from Princeton University, from Science Daily. The article is entitled, Gravity Data Shows That Antarctic Ice Sheet is Melting Increasingly Faster, quote, from the Department of Geosciences. During the past decade, Antarctica's massive ice sheet lost twice the amount of ice in its western portion compared with what it accumulated in the east. That's according to researchers who came to one overall conclusion, the southern continent's ice cap is melting even faster. The researchers weighed Antarctica's ice sheet using gravitational satellite data and found that from 2003 to 2014, the ice sheet lost 92 billion tons of ice per year. The researchers reported in the journal Earth and Planetary Science Letters, if stacked on the island of Manhattan, that amount of ice would be more than a mile high, more than five times the height of the Empire State Building. Now, the vast majority of that loss was from West Antarctica, which is the smaller of the continent's two main regions and abuts the Antarctic Peninsula that winds up towards South America. Now, since 2008, ice loss from West Antarctica's unstable glaciers doubled from an average loss of 121 billion tons of ice to twice that this year. The ice sheet in East Antarctica, the continent's much larger and much more stable region, thickened during the same time but only accumulated half the amount of ice lost from the West. Quote, we have a solution that is very solid, very detailed, and unambiguous. A decade of gravity analysis alone cannot force you to take a position on this, ice loss being due to anthropogenic global warming. All we've done is take the balance of the ice on Antarctica and found that it is melting. There is no doubt. But with the rapidly accelerating rates at which the ice is melting, and in light of all the other well-publicized lines of evidence, most scientists would be hard-pressed to find mechanisms that do not include human-made climate change, end quote. So, the ice is melting, and there's a lot of it, In fact, one piece that broke off, quote, an iceberg more than 2,000 square miles inside. That's how big it was, 2,000 miles, broke off from the Thwaites Glacier. In Antarctica, it's the ocean currents rather than the air temperature that melt the ice. The melted land ice contributes to higher sea levels in a way that melting icebergs don't. As the oceans warm, floating ice shelves melt and can no longer hold back the land ice. Quote, the fact that West Antarctica ice melt is still accelerating is a big deal because it's increasing its contribution to sea level rise. It really has potential to be a runaway problem. It has come to that point. If we continue losing mass in those areas, the loss can generate a self-reinforcing feedback whereby we will be losing more and more ice, ultimately raising sea levels by tens of feet, end quote. Okay, let me put this in perspective so you can understand how this works. Let's just say that you came up to Antarctica, as also true of Greenland. And as you're going around the island, the continent, you notice that there's glaciers, huge glaciers, miles deep, and but they're not able to go into the ocean because there's these giant ice sheets, like an iceberg that's attached to the continent. So they're at a gravitational pull, and they're warming, and there's lakes underneath, so they have every single thing there for it just to slide. But what's stopping it is it's back-ended. There's something holding it. As those break, the one that was 2,000 miles breaks and goes into the ocean and floats away, that iceberg, those don't raise the water. Just remember, if you filled your glass with water and ice and all the ice melted, it would not overflow the glass. So icebergs don't contribute to an increase in water in the ocean. But what they do is they hold back that which will, the glaciers. So now that all of these icebergs are breaking off from where they're attached to the land and floating away, there's no longer a backstop. Now, just imagine 100 guys running up and holding a wall that's about to topple, and so it doesn't topple. And then one by one, those guys leave until you've got a few guys, and then it breaks. Then everything behind that wall is going to come tumbling forward. That's what's about to happen, is happening. And you're going to see larger and larger ice sheets and islands float away, and then you'll start to see the big ugly. What's the big ugly? Where huge amounts of ice in these ice walls that have never been recorded before, are going to start to calve, meaning they're going to break and fall, break and fall, break and fall. The ones behind them are going to push them forward, and then it becomes a loop that cannot be stopped. And so you could go to bed one night and wake up the next day and have a whole lot more water than what anyone anticipated. So it's not, is this going to happen? It's happening. So what I predicted 7 years ago in my first series on the 12 tipping points is happening. And I believe that we will see some form of major increase in the water of the ocean, because there's only one ocean, within the next 36 months, if things continue to accelerate the way they are, and they are. Now, separately on environmental issue, this is from Daily Cause. It's Super El Nino likely as huge warm water wave hits the West Coast. Quote, in early March, the strongest wave of tropical convection ever measured, known as the Madden-Julian Oscillation by modern meteorological movements, moved into the western Pacific from Indonesian waters, bringing an outbreak of three tropical cyclones, including a deadly Category 5 called Pam, which ravaged the South Pacific Islands. This extreme outburst of tropical storms and organized thunderstorms pulled strong westerly winds across the equator, unleashing a huge surge of warm water below the ocean surface. Now, normally, trade winds blow warm water across the Pacific from the Americas to Australia and Indonesia, pushing up sea level in the West Pacific. When the trade winds suddenly reversed to strong westerlies, it was as if a dam had burst, but on a scale the Earth's largest ocean, the Pacific, had ever seen. The front edge of that massive equatorial wave, called the Kelvin Wave, is now coming ashore on the Americas. Last year, the largest Kelvin wave ever seen in the Pacific Ocean developed in February. After it came ashore and the surge of warm water moved up the Pacific coast, the upwelling of nutrient-rich cold water, remember your cold water is at the bottom, your warm water is at the top, and you had marine life that began starving up and down the entire coast of North America. As the warm water moved north from the equator, it merged with an enormous mass of warm stagnant water, dubbed the blob, which had built up in the central North Pacific Ocean under the mound of high barometric pressure known as the Pacific High. Now, because the Pacific High had expanded north of its normal position, possibly because of climate change and warm, stagnant, low nutrient water, covered a large percentage of the surface of the North Pacific Ocean. That stagnant water came ashore on the coast of the Pacific Northwest in Alaska as the surge of warm water from the Kelvin wave moved up the California coast. Here's what the outcome was. The warm, stagnant water lacked nutrients to support the growth of krill and copepods, which are at the bottom of the food chain. Species that fed on krill and copepods had to eat, but they had little to eat. Juvenile birds were the first to be affected by the lack of food. The West Coast marine die-off is already a crisis, but it's likely to get much worse this summer and fall as the surge of warm water moves up the coast. And remember, as it moves from this huge Kelvin wave now coming ashore, it doesn't have the nutrients. So the small creatures don't have food. As a result, the ones that eat on them don't have it. The results, just in the last month, you've seen 10,000 baby sea lions dead on one California island. That's just one island. And it's never been seen before, that much death. An unprecedented number of tiny seabirds that dive for plankton were found dead, apparently of starvation, off the coast of California. So nutrient-poor warm waters are the probable cause of lack of food. And last year, beginning with Halloween, thousands of juvenile auklets started washing ashore dead from California's Farallon Islands, and off the central British Columbian coast, they also died. So we're just seeing massive and massive amounts of millions of dead birds and fish. Now, the warming of last year's huge Kelvin wave started a global core bleaching event. It's likely to get much worse after this year's huge wave of warm water spreads up and down the coasts of North and South America. So, once you start bleaching, not good. You start bleaching coral reefs, everything that eats the coral reefs is going to die. Then everything it eats that eats what ate the coral reef is going to die. Remember, let me just explain this in lay language. Bleaching takes place when corals are stressed due to changes in light and nutrient or temperature. And only the latter can cause events of this magnitude. This causes them to release algae, lose their color, and in some cases die off. It's a relatively rare occurrence, but it happens. And large-scale bleaching has been going on now for some time. So we are going to see a whole lot of death and destruction of the aquatic systems in the West Coast coming at you. Just be aware of that. Now, one thing before we take our break, and this has to do with something new the government is intending to give us. The federal health officials are trying to get vaccine agendas mandated, even though there is lots of evidence that immunizations harm or even kill patients, while offering no quality, independent science that you avoid disease by getting them. Here's their latest. the National Vaccine Advisory Committee, published by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, says that they're going to target pregnant women for vaccination. And the report references the need for successful development of a national maternal immunization program. Now, they're going to try to get every pregnant woman in the United States to be mandated to take a whole series of vaccines. And yet, Santa Fe Pasteur, the manufacturers of Fluzone and Fluzone Intradermal, the product literature, right in its package, says that these have not been adequately tested. Quote, animal reproduction studies have not been conducted with Fluzone. It is also not known whether Fluzone can cause fetal harm when administered to a pregnant woman or can affect reproductive capacity. End quote. That's their own package insert. So they're acknowledging, we don't know what this is going to do, and we don't know if it's going to hurt the women. So why in the world, if you've done no studies at all, would you want to mandate this in pregnant women? In addition, vaccine producers also note there are, quote, no studies conducted on safety and efficacy of the vaccine in children younger than 6 months of age. Every doctor should be against that policy to force pregnant women to undergo risky medical treatment. Quote, this is from the manufacturer. Safety and efficacy of Fluzone Intradermal have not been established in pregnant women. So why in the world would you want a pregnant woman to take these? Profit. It's money. That's all it is. So once again, we see how corrupt our government is at every level. It's one giant metastasized cancer. Here's the facts. Science. Not politics. Not agenda. We have absolute irrefutable proof that 4,250% increase in fetal deaths reported to the government's own vaccine reporting after the flu shot given to pregnant women. Christina England in Same Vax, quote, documented this, that, by the way, this was received from the National Coalition of Organized Women, states that between 2009-2010, the mercury-laden combined flu vaccines have increased vaccine adverse reporting system fetal deaths 4,250% in pregnant women. So, and yet the CDC does not care about women, doesn't care about anything. They're just pure political animals. These people are ruthless, liars, lowlifes. So when confronted with this, that you're killing babies, causing all these miscarriages, they come out and lie. And they say, oh, you know, no, that's not true. It is true. In a letter to Dr. Joseph Mercola, Ms. Deneman wrote, quote, not only did the CDC fail to disclose the spiraling spike in fetal death reports in real time during the 2009 pandemic season as to cut fetal losses, but also we have documented a transcript. Dr. Maria McCormick, chairperson of the Vaccine Safety Risk Assessment Working Group, on September 3, 2010, denying any adverse events in the pregnancy population during 2010 pandemic season, end quote. Well, because the H1N1 pandemic vaccine had never been tested on the pregnant population, and to lessen the intensity of fears of the unknown risk, Dr. McCormick of the CDC was employed to keep track of all adverse events during that 2009 pandemic season, including those adverse events in the pregnant population. She was responsible for sending monthly reports to the Secretary of Health and Human Services citing any suspicious adverse events. According to Ms. Deneman, it is now has been unable to obtain access to these monthly reports. After sending a Freedom of Information Act request to the CDC, she was told that she may have to wait 36 months to access what should be in the public. The Mercola letter continues, quote, the Advisory Committee on Childhood Vaccines and the CDC were confronted with the virus data from a women's group on September 3, 2010 in Washington, D.C., and then again by conference call on September 10th, and then again in Atlanta, Georgia on October 28, 2010. On both September 3 and September 10, Dr. Maria McCormick clearly denied there were any adverse events for pregnant women from the 2009 flu vaccine. To emphasize their point, on October 28th, the group of women requested Dr. Renee Tocco present their data to the CDC headquarters in Atlanta. The CDC's Dr. Shembakaruku gave a presentation on significant adverse events to the H1N1 vaccine, such as cases of paralysis, which appear to have risen 3%, claiming that it is an insignificant signal. No mention at all was made of adverse events related to pregnant women. Unfortunately for Dr. Shembakaruku, his attempts to pull the wool over the eyes of the audience was foiled when he was challenged by a member of the audience asking if vaccine caused adverse events in pregnancy. Feeling cornered, he reluctantly looked in his bag and sheepishly presented a slide that corroborated their data, confirming the CDC knew of the spike in fetal deaths in the fall of 2010. So why did he have a slide containing compromising evidence in his bag? Why did he decide to hide the slide? Surely if he had prepared a slide outlining this crucial data, it would have made sense to include the slide in his presentation. After all, 4,250% increase in fetal deaths is far more significant than a 3% increase in one syndrome. Ms. Daneman believes that the existence of this slide, along with the omission of it in his presentation, confirms the CDC knew the spike in fetal deaths by the fall of 2010 and was attempting by any means possible not to make it public. So, despite the evidence that CDC knew of a 4,250% increase in fetal deaths reports in 2009-10 in order to ensure the continuance of the vaccine program for pregnant women, the CDC published a study authored by a Dr. Morrow of the CDC in the fall of 2010. The study articulated there were only 23 miscarriages caused by the single flu vaccine in 19 years between 1990 and 2009, an average of 1.2 miscarriages per year. This study formed the basis of a CDC widely publicized campaign that the flu shot was safe for pregnant women by willfully strategically excluding the 2009 pandemic data, which was available to them. Quote, both the CDC and another group were well aware of the fact that physicians and the public were awaiting the results of the 2009 H1N1 untested vaccine on pregnant women amid solid assurances to the public at the beginning of the pandemic season that the CDC was on top of collecting any adverse reactions. Well, they didn't. They lied. They continued to lie. Now, mind you, this is the same organization that now has a whistleblower coming forward saying, well, they lied about all this other stuff, too. They lied about the association between vaccines and autism. So it's an organization that should be completely disbanded, and all those found to have participated in any cover-ups, any hiding of true data, should be, at least at the very least, asked to come forward and apologize for all the unnecessary deaths. You've got an awful lot of women and men out there whose children never were because they believed in you, and you killed their babies. It's that simple. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to hear a little bit of rap for about 4 minutes, but bringing together some insights for the younger people to understand the world they live in. Let's listen in.
Dear future generations, I think I speak for the rest of us when I say, sorry. Sorry we left you with our mess of a planet. Sorry that we were too caught up in our own doings to do something. Sorry we listened to people who made excuses to do nothing. I hope you forgive us. We just didn't realize how special the earth was, like a marriage gone wrong. We didn't know what we had until it was gone. For example, I'm guessing you probably know it as the Amazon Desert, right? Well, believe it or not, it was once called the Amazon Rainforest, and there were billions of trees there, all of them gorgeous, and... Oh, you don't know much about trees, do you? Well, let me tell you, trees are amazing. I mean, we literally breathe the air they are creating. They clean up our pollution, our carbon. They store and purify water, give us medicine that cures our diseases, food that feeds us, which is why I'm so sorry to tell you that we burn them down. Cut them down with brutal machines, horrific, at a rate of 40 football fields every minute. That's 50% of all the trees in the world gone in the last 100 years. Why? For this. And that wouldn't make me so sad if it weren't so many pictures of leaves on it. You know, when I was a child, I read how the Native Americans had such consideration for the planet that they felt responsible for how they left the land for the next 7 generations. Which brings me great sorrow, because most of us today don't even care about tomorrow. So I'm sorry. I'm sorry that we put profit above people, greed above need, the rule of gold above the golden rule. I'm sorry we use nature as a credit card with no spending limit, overdrafting animals to extinction, stealing your chance to ever see their uniqueness or become friends with them. Sorry we poison the ocean so much that you can't even swim in them. But most of all, I'm sorry about our mindset. Because we had the nerve to call this destruction progress. Hey, Fox News, if you don't think climate change is a threat, I dare you to interview the thousands of homeless people in Bangladesh. See, while you were in your penthouse nestled, their homes were literally washed away beneath their feet due to rising sea levels. And Sarah Palin, you said that you love the smell of fossil fuels. Well, I urge you to talk to the kids of Beijing who are forced to wear pollution masks just to go to school. See, you can ignore this, but the thing about truth is, it can be denied, not avoided. So I'm sorry, future generations. I'm sorry that our footprint became a sinkhole and not a garden. I'm sorry that we paid so much attention to ISIS and very little to how fast the ice is melting in the Arctic. I'm sorry we doomed you, and I'm sorry we couldn't find another planet in time to move to. You know what? Cut the beat. I'm not sorry. This future, I do not accept it. Because an error does not become a mistake until you refuse to correct it. We can redirect this. How? Let me suggest that if a farmer sees a tree that is unhealthy, they don't look at the branches to diagnose it, they look at the root. So like that farmer, we must look at the root, and not to the branches of government, not to the politicians run by corporations. We are the root, we are the foundation, this generation. It is up to us to take care of this planet. It is our only home. We must globally warm our hearts and change the climate of our souls and realize that we are not apart from nature, we are a part of nature. And to betray nature is to betray us. To save nature is to save us. Because whatever you're fighting for, racism or poverty, feminism, gay rights, or any type of equality, it won't matter in the least. Because if we don't all work together to save the environment, we will be equally extinct. So,
I'd like to share a letter, a short letter from Ralph Nader to President Obama. Dear Mr. President, you have taken a strong, a across-the-board position favoring the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Nearing completion and scheduled for a fast-track clearance vote in Congress. Indeed, you have descended admirably from your presidential perch to take on the most informed critics of this agreement with Australia, Canada, Chile, Japan, Malaysia, Mexico, New Zealand, Peru, Singapore, and Vietnam. You have accused critics of spreading misinformation, including Senator Elizabeth Warren and Lori Wallach, the director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, who is known for her meticulous research and who was at Harvard Law School during your time there. With a barrage of commentary on an agreement labeling singularly as trade promotion by unknown newspaper columnists and reporters, and the less reported rebuttals that the Trans-Pacific Partnership is far more than a trade agreement. It is a treaty and places serious environmental, health, consumer, and labor conditions within its grip. Isn't it time for you to engage with concerned citizens and their representatives rather than assert unilaterally that, quote, Elizabeth Warren is wrong on the facts? It is time to clarify the issues before a skeptical public and others who are downright confused. Why not debate Dr. Elizabeth Warren before a national TV audience? There are many reasons for you to use this format to engage the American public. They will be the ones paying the price in many dire ways if the mega corporation promoters of the Trans-Pacific Partnership turn out to be as wrong as they have been with prior trade deals, most recently the Korean Trade Agreement, which you espoused and which has worsened the trade deficit with South Korea and caused job losses in the United States. Vice President Albert Gore debated NAFTA on nationwide television with Ross Perot. You and Senator Warren have been leaders and teachers of the law and share a common law school background, Harvard. A debate would be deliberative, and assuming that you and she have read the 29 chapters of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, would be revelatory, far beyond the narrow prisms reflected in the mass media. Like NAFTA and the World Trade Organization, the Trans-Pacific Partnership is a transnational system of autocratic governance that subordinates and bypasses our access to our own judiciary in favor of secret tribunals whose procedures contravene our country's system of due process and openness and independent appeals. These agreements, as you know, have enforceable provisions regarding the right and privileges of corporations. The rhetorical assurances regarding labor, environment, and consumer rights have no such enforceable mechanisms. Notwithstanding all the win-win claims of promoters of past trade agreements, our country's trade deficit has continued to grow over the last 35 years. Enormous trade deficits mean job exports. Given this evidence, the public would be interested in listening to your explanation of this adverse experience to U.S. workers and our economy. You believe Elizabeth Warren is wrong on the facts relating to the investors' slate of dispute settlement provisions of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which allows foreign companies to challenge our health, safety, and regulations, not in our courts, but before an international panel of arbiters, a perfect point, counterpoint for a debate process, right? Over the years, it's been abundantly clear that very few lawmakers or presidents have actually read the text of these trade agreements involving excessive surrender of local, state, and federal sovereignties. They have relied on memorandum prepared by the U.S. Trade Representative and corporate lobbies. Given the mass of fine print with portentous consequences for every American, a worthy debate topic is whether to put off submitting this trade pact so the copies can be made accessible to the American public to discuss and consider before going to Congress under very limited debate for an up and down vote without any amendments being permitted. Why rush when the ink isn't even dry on the paper? Some may wonder why you don't call this agreement a treaty, like other countries. Could it be that an agreement only requires a 51% vote rather than two-thirds vote in the Congress for treaty ratification? You were quoted by the Washington Post decrying misinformation circulating on the Trans-Pacific Partnership and pledging that you are going to be pushing back very hard if I keep on hearing that. Fine. Push back before tens of millions of people with Senator Elizabeth Warren as your debating counterpart. If you agree, be sure that interested Americans have a copy of the Trans-Pacific Deal first so they can be an informed audience. I look forward to your response. Sincerely, Ralph Nader. Good for you, Ralph. Good for you. Now, Dr. Oz has been attacked. We mentioned on the show. Now let's hear from your own researcher looking into the background of people who attacked you.
You may have seen the headlines attacking me this past week after a brazen letter from 10 mysterious doctors called for my removal from Columbia University Medical School, where I have proudly been on the faculty for almost 20 years. I was surprised, since my life's work has been built around one simple message. You have a right and a responsibility to become a world expert on your own body. And the way you do that is by having access to the best, most current information, multiple points of view, and diverse opinions. That's the best way you can make an informed decision about you and your family's health. Figuring out how to talk about your health and how to talk to you about it can be difficult. And there's been a backlash to my approach in some parts of the medical community. The 10 doctors who attacked me got what they intended: sensational headlines and sound bites. I've long believed that doctors should never fight their battles or each other in public. But now I believe I must. Many papers mistakenly claimed my own hospital's doctors were out to get me. That's just not true. These doctors are criticizing me for promoting treatments and cures in the interest of personal financial gain, something I tell you every day on this program I never do. In addition, they cite my baseless and relentless opposition to the genetic engineering of food crops. Again, it's not true. I have never judged GMO foods. But just like 64 countries around the world, I support GMO labeling so you can decide on the foods for your family. They went as far as to call me a quack. But even my harshest critics, the authors of a recent British Medical Journal piece, acknowledged that they are, and I'll quote this, disappointed that the overwhelming commentary seems to be that our study somehow proves that Dr. Oz or the doctors in another show are quacks or charlatans or worse. Our data in no way supports these conclusions. So I wanted to learn who these doctors really are. I asked investigative reporter Elizabeth Leamy to find out more about my critics. And she uncovered some surprising hidden connections. Now, it's ironic that I'm being accused of a conflict of interest by these doctors when, as you're about to see, some of them have their own conflict of interest issues and some integrity ones also.
10 doctors, all with one agenda. But what you don't know, several of these doctors who signed the letter asking Columbia University to fire Dr. Oz have big ties to big industry. The man whose name is at the top of the letter, Dr. Henry Miller. On paper, Miller looks impressive. But put him under the microscope and there's more to the story. You see, Miller strongly supports genetically modified foods, or GMOs, which Dr. Oz has said should be labeled.
The way that Prop 37 has been crafted really makes no sense at all.
In fact, Miller was the face and voice of No on Prop 37, the California campaign that lobbied consumers to vote against labeling GMOs.
It just gives an indication of the arbitrary and completely illogical nature of this ill-conceived proposition.
Miller got into hot water for taping this anti-Prop 37 ad on the Stanford University campus. The ad identified him as being with Stanford, but Miller is actually with the Hoover Institution, a conservative think tank that's located at Stanford. The university demanded that he pull the ad. It's not the first time Henry Miller has been tied to industry. Documents show that in the 1990s, Miller was a key supporter of the tobacco industry and even helped write the guiding scientific principles of a group that was established to fight smoking restrictions.
At SourceWatch, we track the corporate front groups and talking heads that shill for corporations. And in our view, Dr. Henry Miller is a shill for corporations.
What Henry Miller does is he speaks on behalf of big corporations who have big trouble, and he tells big lies on their behalf.
Miller is also involved with an organization located here, the American Council on Science and Health, or ACSH. Remember that name? You're going to hear it again. We went to talk to them at their headquarters in New York City, but no one was there. ACSH may sound pro-consumer, but it has spoken in defense of cigarettes, pesticides, genetically modified foods, and more, all while taking money from tobacco companies, pesticide makers, and firms behind genetically modified foods, according to internal documents leaked to Mother Jones magazine.
We have seen funding documents that show that there is, in fact, a direct line between the corporations that ACSH solicits and the positions that it takes in public.
They're rent-a-scientists, and they're famous for being rent-a-scientists, and this is really well established.
ACSH President Gilbert Ross also signed the letter against Dr. Oz. But take a closer look at Ross, and this is what you see. He's a convicted felon. While working as a doctor, Ross was charged in a Medicaid fraud scheme that cost the state of New York $8 million in all. Ross was sentenced to nearly 4 years and served time in federal prison.
The judge said Ross was a highly untrustworthy individual. Those were his exact words.
And guess what? Two more doctors who signed the letter, Jack Fisher and Glenn Swagger, are also affiliated with ACSH.
I think this is definitely a smear campaign against Dr. Oz, and I think it's a campaign that's driven by individuals who are connected to big industries.
Critic number five brings us full circle. Dr. Scott Atlas works with Henry Miller at the Hoover Institution, and Hoover has taken money from companies that produce genetically modified foods. Those are just some of the doctors behind the letter calling Dr. Oz's character and his agenda into question. Who should you believe? You be the judge.
I'm Gary Nall, and we're at the end of our program. Tomorrow we have a lot to share, and including why I will not be supporting, on any level, the run for office of Bernie Sanders. And I'll also give you the latest on the Clinton Foundation and who their top donors were. And then what did she do as Secretary of State? What does she likely do as president? It's all so easy to see. So I'll share that with you tomorrow. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day. Now let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Gary, as you know, and many of your audience members know, we just finished up a 2-week retreat, and it was an amazing retreat. And I have been getting letters from so many of the attendees, and I wanted to share one if I could.
Sure.
This is from Yolene, and she said, I wanted to express my heartfelt gratitude and appreciation for a most transformative, life-altering journey. I will treasure the gift of these 6 days spent at the retreat, and the value of the retreat exceeds the cost that I paid to attend.
You're coming in and out. Talk into the telephone, Luann.
Okay, let me
start over talking to the telephone.
Okay, hold on. Let me get my other phone. All right, that's better?
Yes.
Okay. So she says, I wanted to express my heartfelt gratitude and appreciation for a most transformative, life-altering journey. I will treasure the gift of these 6 days spent at the retreat. She said, the value of the retreat exceeds the cost that I paid to attend. She says, certain cultures have their shamans, medicine men, healers, their seers, and other mystical beings. 1 year while visiting family in Haiti, a man approached me in the streets in Port-au-Prince and whispered something to me. When I later recounted it to my family, I was told in Creole that it was something about where energy flows from a source. And she says, my progress has been ongoing. And Gary, you said the energy flow didn't give me what I wanted, but what I needed. I mentioned to you during our session that a result of my radiation, I developed a certain condition in my jaw. I underwent speech therapy, cranial lymphatic drainage, interior mouth massages, and acupuncture, all worked to a small degree. However, in one session, 2 hours, and a day later, now a week later, I'm still feeling the residual benefits of what occurred. Some of the numbness on the right side of my face, which was a byproduct of the surgery, has all but dissipated. I have a wider mouth opening than before. I pray and meditate that I'll continue for years to come to reap the rewards of this day. She gives us a quote by Harriet Tubman. She said, I looked at my hands to see if I was the same person. There was such glory over everything. The sun came up like gold through the trees, and I felt like I was in heaven. I'm keeping to the discipline and structure of the retreat, and power walking. And I can't forget my new best friend, Ticino, which is an herbal coffee. She says, I'm currently reading a book on somatics, continuing my search towards attaining and maintaining maximum and optimal health and positive mental disposition. Harriet Tubman was such a wise woman. That's why I love to quote her. She said, I freed 1,000 slaves. I could have freed 1,000 more if only they knew that they were slaves. I like the word enslaved better. Imagine how many people Gary would guide to wellness and put them on the path to staying healthy by implementing the practices we've acquired during this retreat. Many continue to be enslaved by big pharma and diseases that could so easily be cured with a good nutrition. I feel so blessed and so energized by my experience. I've been given a new lease on life and have taken greater ownership of my health. This is my recognition for this wonderful bounty. With blessings and warmest regards, Yolene.
I would offer a different perspective on something she ended her statement with. It is not for any of us who wish to share what we have in our knowledge or insights with it, with another person, with the world, because it's not what we're sharing that will ultimately determine whether a person improves or gets well or is happy. There's an old Spanish proverb, to the good listener, half a word is enough. And the problem is that in our lives, we don't have good listeners. Why? Because their belief system doesn't allow them to hear anything other than what has been predetermined is their individual and collective truth. So if a person comes even into an environment to relax, to de-stress, to learn, to help themselves, nothing will happen unless they are free of their conditioned self. That means prior attitudes and emotions must be surrendered at the door. If not, no matter what you expose a person to, no matter what gifts you give a person, they cannot use them, even if they need them and they want them. Because in the end, we do not die of cancer or heart disease or strokes or diabetes or Alzheimer's. Those are secondary. We die of our beliefs. Our belief systems allow us to enjoy a life of meaning and purpose, or at some point condemn everyone else as being responsible for a lack of happiness and what we do not have, the certainties that can never be there in an uncertain world, and the security that can never be there in an insecure person. So if a person comes insecure, then they're never going to be able to be helped. I've not seen anyone in my lifetime helped who was blocking their own energy, even if they wanted it, needed it desperately. This was a person who had surrendered that certainty at the door and allowed herself to be vulnerable enough to absorb what was there. Thank you for your reading that, Luann.
Okay.
Let's say hello to you, Trees Lead. Hi, you Trees.
Hello, Gary. Today we are taking a tour, a legal tour of the indictments of 6 police officers in Baltimore with respect to the death of Mr. Gray. So we'll be talking about that today.
Great. You Trees right now.
Loving you forever.